it's really terrifying at first. The moment when I realized that the draft I had written wasn't working, I couldn't make it work, and I needed to completely start over, that was terrifying. But throwing it away and actually doing it was really freeing.
This is Finding the Throughline, the show that gives you inside access to honest conversations about the creative process. I'm Kate Hanley. Today's guest is novelist Antonia Angress, who is the author of the novel Sirens and Muses, which Publishers Weekly called a standout and which won the Minnesota Book Award. Antonia was also recently named one of the NEA's 2024 Creative Writing Fellows. Today, I am talking with Antonia about what I call the inner stuff, the thoughts, ideas, and attitudes that affect your work even when you're not fully conscious of it. So, I'm curious, are there parts of the work itself that come to you more easily than others? Like, what parts just really flow?
I really like the editing phase.
Mm-hmm.
Writing first drafts is always the hardest part for me. Making something out of nothing it will always be difficult for me. But getting to the point where I know exactly what the novel wants to be, and I'm pushing it towards its final form. I know it's not quite there yet, but I know what I need to do to get it there. I'll often make, for every chapter that I'm working on, I'll make a list of things that I need to add or change. And my sort of like inner neat freak really loves the process of checking each of those things off the list. But I also really, really enjoy the stage of writing where I'm just tinkering with sentences. I don't allow myself to do that in the first drafts because I know that a lot of that gets thrown away. And for me, in the first draft, the most important thing to do is kind of figure out what the story is, who the characters are. And I find that if I spend too much time at the sentence level, then I'm going to get bogged down and that important kind of groundwork is not going to get laid. So I make myself wait until I'm at draft 3 or 4 before I allow myself to make the sentences really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is always a pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to read the work out loud while I'm writing and edit as I go. Yeah, I think editing is for me the most fun part and the part I really look forward to. And it's my reward for struggling through the first draft.
I'm curious, and this isn't on the list of questions that I shared with you beforehand, but what percentage of those first drafts would you say you don't use?
Probably like, for my first novel, Sirens and Muses, I would say threw away at least half. For the novel that I'm finishing up now, I did 2 major rewrites. So the first draft, the first version of it, I'd used really nothing, maybe a few paragraphs.
Wow.
So I threw away maybe like 50,000 to 60,000 words and then just completely started from scratch. And then next draft, I threw away maybe 50% and rewrote from there. So really a lot of it gets tossed in the garbage pail at that early stage.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, that sounds like, oh, my babies. But on the other hand, it's got to be freeing when you're writing that first draft, you know?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, who cares?
And the stage, I call it the slash and burn stage, where I'm like, it's really terrifying at first. The moment when I realized that the draft I had written wasn't working, I couldn't make it work, and I needed to completely start over, that was terrifying. But throwing it away and actually doing it was really freeing.
Mm. Is there a part of writing or sharing your work that really just you don't like? It gives you the heebie-jeebies, like, let me just stay in bed.
I don't love promoting my work. This is one of the things I learned when I published my book, and I suddenly had to, you know, I had to do a book tour and I had to talk to the press, you know, and do interviews. I realized that there's a reason I like to write and not speak. Mm-hmm. I'm really not a great public speaker. I don't love being up in front of a crowd. Some writers are really good at this. Some writers are really great performers. I am not one of those people. You know, I think it sort of made me realize that there was, you know, this whole aspect of being a professional author that I don't want to say that I think that I'm not particularly good at. It's because I just really don't, I haven't had much practice. I'm hoping that the second time around will be easier. But I think for me, like, communicating my thoughts via writing is always going to be easier than communicating them in front of an audience at a bookstore.
Right. And what is it? Can you put a point on it? Is it like, I don't know what to say, or I just, what is it?
I think that's part of it. I think when I write, I have the time and the space to really think through what I want to say and revise it and make sure that it's every word is exactly right. When I'm at a bookstore event and I'm answering audience questions, I'll often have the experience of sort of answering something off the cuff and then later that night, like lying awake in bed and cringing at what I said and thinking to myself, oh my God, I could have answered that so much better. I sounded like I really did. That was not an eloquent answer. That was not a particularly thorough answer. So I think there's a lot of that, just me not being particularly good at extemporaneous speaking or public speaking, and just really preferring writing as a form of communication.
Yeah. I do think you'll get better at it with practice.
I hope so.
Yeah, just like writing. We talked about this a little bit in the first episode, but what kinds of things does your inner critic just tell you on repeat? I find that there's generally some interesting themes, although the overarching theme is you're no good at this or unfriendly.
I think most people's inner critics say pretty much the same thing, mm-hmm. which is, this is terrible. You're no good at this. You can't do it. That's pretty much what mine usually says. I've learned to block it out, you know, with limited amounts of success. But one of the things that has been really comforting to me is talking to authors who are much further along in their careers than me, people who have multiple books under their belts and who have won major awards, who've basically said that never really goes away. You just kind of have to learn to live with it. You have to learn to block it out. I remember when I was in graduate school, I got an MFA in creative writing, and I wrote Sirens and Muses was actually my thesis for that program. But about halfway through, I had this sort of creative crisis where I just felt like I couldn't do it. And I went to one of my mentors in the program, who is a very eminent writer, many books under his belt. And I kind of expressed to him how I was feeling, and he kind of laughed and he said, you know, that never goes away. And I found that really comforting to know that even someone as accomplished as him still has those moments of self-doubt.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I mean, that's part of why I wanted to start this podcast, quite honestly, so that everybody could kind of share the ways that they experience it and also get through it. Is there something that you do that when the doubts are really coming up, like, are there go-to strategies that you've come up with?
Sometimes I need to take a break. Sometimes the inner critic is so loud that it becomes toxic and it really gets in the way of the writing, and any writing I do is just kind of feeding the inner critic. So sometimes that means I'm going to take a break and I'm going to do something else. I'm going to read a book, or I'm going to watch some TV, or I'm going to talk to a friend, and I'm going to take a break from this work, and that's okay. And generally I find that if I give myself, you know, a day or two and then come back to the work, one of two things is going to happen. Either I'll reread it and I'll think, oh, this is not as bad as I thought. Or I'll reread it and I'll think, okay, this is not great, but I know how to fix it, or I know how to push it forward.
Mm. Do you mind sharing how old you are?
I'm 33.
Okay. How does your being 33, do you think, affect your work? Like, does it make... Yeah, I'm just going to stop talking there.
You certainly hear about sort of these wunderkind authors who publish really good work, you know, when they're very young, early 20s, right? Those people exist. I'm not one of them. I think most people aren't. I think most writers need time to really hone their craft and figure out what they want to say. When I was younger, I think I felt a lot of, I felt this sense of, I have to publish a book before I turn 30. And I didn't. You know, my first book, I got pretty close. My first book came out when I was 31. But I'm really glad that I didn't publish anything significant in my 20s, because my work wasn't ready and I wasn't ready to deal with the pressures of publication, which can be quite intense. And I think my work has gotten better as I've gotten older. I think this new book that I'm writing now is better than my debut. At least I hope it is. I hope that most writers, when they look back at their first novel, you know, look at it with fondness, but also with the knowledge that it's not their best work, that years of experience really only add to the quality of the writing. This is my hope.
That makes perfect sense. I completely buy it. Is there something about maybe the way you think that is out of step with who you consider to be your peers?
I don't really think so. No. When I think of other writers my age who I'm friends with, I think that, and you know, maybe it's just sort of self-selecting, you gravitate towards people whose opinions and worldview you share, but I don't really think of myself as an iconoclast or a renegade.
Okay. Are there ideas or beliefs that you were either taught, maybe not taught outright, but sort of osmosed from some source or another that you've come to believe or realize that are just not helpful?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think I grew, like a lot of people, I romanticized this idea of like the tortured artist, this idea that you have to suffer to make art, that you have to have an untreated mental illness and starve yourself and be really miserable. And I think that's a really toxic narrative. I do my best writing when I am feeling secure in my relationships and when like my basic needs are met, when I get enough sleep, when I'm well nourished, and when I'm not dealing with intense depression. I mean, like a lot of people, like a lot of writers, I think, you know, I've struggled with anxiety and depression, and I don't write when I'm depressed. To me, it's not conducive to creativity. So I think this idea that the best work comes out of suffering is really kind of bullshit and harmful.
Yeah. Was there a moment when you realized like, oh, I think that I had this unconscious belief and I have been creating unnecessary suffering and I'm walking away from this? Or did you kind of go into it with your eyes open to that?
I think, you know, my first novel, Sirens and Muses, is about artists, mm-hmm. about young artists who often sort of feel the need to break themselves in pursuit of their art. So when I was writing that novel, I had a lot of time to kind of examine those ideas that I think a lot of us hold. But I mean, certainly like a lot of people, like a lot of women, I think I did sort of feel the need to martyr myself as a younger person. And part of getting older has been really prioritizing taking care of myself. Even now, I'm sort of struggling with it. You know, I'm in my last month of pregnancy, and I know that the thing that I need to be doing right now is resting and and just really taking it easy. And I still, for the most part, I'm like very much okay with that. But I still sort of have these moments of guilt where I'm like, oh my God, I should be doing something. I shouldn't be in bed right now, relaxing. So I think that's something that I've had to unlearn and that I'm still in the process of unlearning.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, we live in a capitalist society. Mm-hmm. We derive value from how much value we create, type of a thing. So mm-hmm. it can be hard to undo that idea that if I'm not doing anything, then I'm just like taking up space. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, is there some sort of like, I don't know, a personality assessment tool or even a school of thought, like maybe astrology, that helps you have insight into yourself and how you work and maybe how you do that work?
Well, to go back to an earlier question, you asked if I was out of step with anyone in my generation.
I
am out of step in the sense that most of my friends, I'm a millennial, and I think most of my millennial friends are really into astrology.
I am not.
I really don't know a lot about astrology, and I've been having a lot of conversations with, well, people ask me when I'm due, and they'll say, oh, you're having a Pisces. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I am. I don't really know what that means. I wouldn't say there's a particular school of thought or personality test that I've gotten deep meaning out of. I will say that I'm a big believer in therapy. I've been sort of in and out of therapy for most of my adult life. And that has, for me, has been a really valuable tool to, you know, sort of help me recognize the kinds of harmful thought patterns that I'm prone to falling into and the ways that I sabotage myself, the false narratives that I tell myself. That for me has been really, really important in sort of unlearning bad habits or unlearning habits that get in the way of my own happiness.
Thank you so much for sharing these answers with us. Mm-hmm. That wraps up our questions on the inner parts of the creative process. I'm looking forward to getting a preview of what's coming up for you and hearing about what you're currently staying up too late reading and watching. Thank you for being here for this part of it, Antonia. And thank you, listeners, for being here, and come back on Friday. Finding the Throughline airs one interview per week, broken up into three episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. Skip the ads and get each interview in one longer episode by becoming a paid subscriber at katehanley.substack.com. Even if you aren't ready to get out your wallet just yet, become a free subscriber at katehanley.substack.com and receive the full show notes with links to everything my guests and I cover. However you listen, thank you. Finding the Throughline is edited by Sound Advice Strategies. Connect with me on Instagram at Kate Hanley Author. Here's a little preview of what's to come in part three of this interview.
One of the great joys of publishing a first novel was getting to talk to readers who connected with the book, getting messages from readers who connected with the book. I love that. That was really fulfilling and meaningful to me. But I would love to not have to be on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to get to a place where I can just sort of let my work speak for itself.
I'm Kate Hanley, and this is Finding the Throughline. More to come on Friday.